Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for August 26, 2022. This is episode number 125. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Lucid Air Sapphire and launch of the Sapphire brand, the price range increase and opening of new orders for the Ford Mustang Mach-E, and the new price tag for Tesla FSD Beta. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the irreproachable Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the majestic Mr. Martin Lee from EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, the convivial Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial European halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Hope you've all had a great week.
Feeling much better. Yep.
Right.
Hey, guys.
Kyle, I understand you're in Stuttgart today, outside the headquarters of Mercedes-Benz.
Oh, well, yeah, just across the street. I'm over at the V8 Hotel, which is where I typically hang out in Stuttgart, which is literally right by Factory 56. If I spin my computer around here.
Okay. So that's Stuttgart. Hello from Stuttgart. All right. So let's dig right into the news, and then we can get to what we've been driving. So last week, not long after the podcast ended, the Lucid Air Sapphire with a tri-motor setup debuted at Monterey Car Week. But it wasn't just the car. Sapphire represents a new ultra-high performance brand from Lucid, much like AMG is for Mercedes or M for BMW. So I think we can look at the changes made to this Air Sapphire and get an idea of what Sapphire vehicles might get in the future. So one can imagine that sometime after the Lucid Gravity SUV launches, that it will get the Sapphire treatment as well in future vehicles. So let's look at this Air. It gets the tri-motor setup. So there are two motors now on the back axle, increasing output to 1,200 horsepower from 1,050, and decreasing acceleration times. So 0-60 happens in less than 2 seconds, they say, while 100 miles per hour can be reached in 4 seconds, and the quarter mile in less than 9 seconds. So it also gets massive carbon ceramic disc brakes, so it should stop decently as well. But it's not all about straight line speed either. It gets stiffer front and rear springs, unique damper settings, stiffer bushings, and a unique tuning for ABS, traction, stability control, and electronic power steering. So, Kyle, are you tempted to trade in the Model S Plaid for the Sapphire, or do you think, and do you think that Lucid has gone far enough with his package?
Well, I think Lucid really needs to focus on one thing, and that's building the cars that people have ordered today. They have a huge uphill battle with production coming, but no question the cars are very technically impressive. Look, at the end of the day, this thing on paper just looks like it rips, and it looked amazing going around Laguna Seca as well. I think it's going to be an awesome platform. The big question that I keep coming up with, though, is, okay, they did this as a direct answer to Plaid. This is for them to win the numbers on paper game. But as an owner of one of these crazy big, you know, luxury-ish, but big, high-power sedans, they're not fun to drive. They're very impressive in a straight line, but they're very heavy. It's not like a driving enthusiast would buy this and have a blast on a back road. This is all about just the numbers game. And for sure, I think they had a target. They're going to beat it, and they're going to win on every metric that they can. And it looks really good with those wide fenders as well. I was hoping Lucid would come, you know, with Peter Rawlinson's history with Lotus, with, you know, eventually down the line, sort of a smaller, lightweight, actually fun car to drive out on a back road or a track, something to chuck around. But no question, this is going to be fast as all hell and very impressive.
Yeah. So you mentioned the wheel treatments there. So they have wider skirts. They have some body, some aero changes as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's much for aero. It's really just to probably fit a wider tire on there.
Sure.
And yep, ceramics. I mean, it's not cheap. It's a lot more money than a plaid. And so, you know, really at the end of the day, it's like, okay, let's just build the ones they got to build now. And then we'll talk about this when it actually comes out next year or whenever. But I think they just needed some good news to pump the stocks. They needed some good story there because they've already right. shared all the good stories they had. Now it's just they got to do, as Martin would say, the hard yards to get the cars out of the factory.
Right. But they didn't create this though, to pump the stock. They had this already in the works. This was part has been part of their, you know, production development.
Totally yeah. understand. I'm just yeah. saying from a story standpoint, what more do they have that's good news to share?
This is a good point. Well, we do have another bit on them. Lucid Factory to see massive expansion. So I'll just run this real quick and we'll go back to the Sapphire because this is just I wanted to mention this is all. So good news. No, that's wrong. Sorry. So I wanted to mention So Lucid is going to massively expand its factory. It's supposedly going to triple its current size and the county has stepped in to provide the needed 1,400 acres. So that, I said in my notes, I have this seems a little premature considering the difficulties Lucid is having getting production up to acceptable levels in the space they already have. But so, yeah, Tom, what's your take on this?
So, well, first going back to Sapphire really quickly.
Sure.
I agree with Kyle with like it's all about on paper and metrics. I do think there's that personal battle between Rawlinson and Musk, you know, knowing each other and Musk is, you know, repeatedly said, well, he was never the lead engineer on the Tesla team. And then you can go back and find like quotes of Elon saying like, oh yeah, our lead engineer, Peter Rawlinson. So like, you know, there's some personal stuff going on here. So I think when Rawlinson set out, he set out to say, to build a car that in every metric was better than a Model S. So the Air that came out initially had a longer range than the Model S. It was more efficient than a Model S. It had more interior cargo space, even though the vehicles are roughly the same size. So it seemed to beat it in pretty much every metric, except for it couldn't beat a plaid in a straight line acceleration. And I think that was part of this plan from the beginning. You know, he wanted it to be faster, better range. Oh, it charges faster also. I think he wanted everything to be better than the Model S. So, and as Kyle said earlier, this wasn't something that they just recently decided to do. We know the Tri-Motor's been in the plans and in the works for a long time. So, you know, they had a team working on this the whole time. So I don't see any issue with it. I did laugh, and I see you pulled up Simon's comment is that, of course, they had to make this because, you know, the original one wasn't fast enough. And it's kind of like, ridiculous to even, you know, to say that they needed a faster version, because I've driven both the range and performance versions of the Air and they're just insane. They're way more power than what 99.9% of the people need. But, you know, there's people that play in the sandbox and can drop, you know, $250,000 in a car, and they're going to be in an exclusive club. Anybody can go out and buy, anybody with the money can go buy a Model S plaid, even a Taycan. But this is going to be low production, low volume, and I think it's going to be the exclusive factor of it that is what's going to attract people to it. I think they're going to sell them if they can build them, and that's right. A problem that they're still working on right now is getting production ramped up. They're struggling. You know, this is kind of, you know, production hell squared. It's not even just production hell because they have to. They're fighting supply chain problems. It's not only that they're having difficulty ironing out their own internal manufacturing issues, but then they don't have parts. So this is a tough period for Lucid. I think they'll get through it, but they're definitely scuffling at this point.
Right.
But Tom, you also mentioned, you know, needing a faster one. Totally agree. The power is great in the dual motor version, but there's a lot of things they can do with the tri-motor to change vehicle dynamics. And the regular Lucid Air is set up really soft. And it's really nicely balanced. And like, you can see, you know, some of the videos of it drifting around track, and I honestly haven't spent enough time with it, but I was really impressed with how the car drove when I had it. And, you know, just having a more performance oriented total vehicle setup will work wonders on that chassis.
Yeah, you can do torque.
I agree.
You can do torque vectoring now. Oh, I like to, I just want to mention, so our regular listener, Docta, who I believe is a Lucid Air owner, says Plaid came because of the Lucid Air. So that's a good point. You know, the I don't know if was Plaid on the table before, you know, the news of Lucid came out. You know,
I don't know if any of us could make that claim, you know, legitimately. You know,
right.
It seems like, you know, Elon was reacting, you know, and then, you know, some people say the Plaid came because of the Taycan. So, you know, I think these companies have these things in the plans long before we ever even know about them. I don't know if that was a reaction to any other vehicle with Tesla putting out, you know, the Plaid version.
At least it means the Plaid Plus can come back now.
Right. So are we, I think that we're going to see a Plaid Plus. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing this in the Plaid on the track together. Cause you know, we've seen some Plaids go sub 9 seconds with like this is supposed to do. And we haven't seen this do it yet either. So we need this. We've seen in development, we've seen a Tri-Motor Lucid a couple of years ago do, was it 9.2 second quarter mile. So, you know, it's pretty close. And you can imagine they've closed that gap in the meantime. And they've announced a sub 2 second. But besides the performance, so I find this thing looks like a lot better. I'm not really a big fan of the regular Lucid Air, but, and I'm not sure if it's just like the wheel treatment or what. It's like just the wider width difference, but I like the exterior. This Sapphire, I'm not sure. It looks like a lot better. I don't know why. I don't know.
And well, as if we're talking about looks, if Martin could pull that, the dual motor setup back up, that's what impresses me so much.
Yeah,
it's incredible how compact that drive unit is. I've seen the dual motor rear axle, we're showing there. It's incredible how each one of those motors are about 600 horsepower and they're tiny. I've seen the electric motors from every auto manufacturer out there. You know, they're all so proud. They show us them all, you know, cut open and sitting on tables. It's amazing what Lucid has done with the packaging of this, how small the motors are and how powerful they are. They really did a super job with their motors.
Yeah. Kyle, do you think they have the best motors in the business right now that you know of?
It's hard to say against some of these like axial flux motors that, you know, maybe Koenigsegg or some others are using. It'd be really, really interesting to see how they hold up from a thermal standpoint. I've never seen a Lucid Air out on a track day with sustained hard driving to see how it holds up.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure. They do mention in the materials that the 0 to 60 or the acceleration sprints, those can be done without a special, like a lengthy preconditioning thing. So
most cars don't need that anymore. I mean, I think that's a 3-year, 4-year ago problem.
Well, the Hummer does that. And I think Tesla still does that, right? The launch mode.
So Tesla heats it up. No, they heat up the battery pack,
right?
Which is good for resistance, but the motors don't care.
Right. Is this separate from the whole motor issue? Yeah. I know those motors are a thing of beauty, though.
I think the big thing is to me still Lucid is very much an unknown. I haven't really driven the car more than, you know, a couple 20 minutes or something like that. And the more I see other people using it, I'm like, are you just impressed because it's not a Tesla and you're a journalist and you hate Tesla, or is it actually good? And I just don't know.
Right. Well, I think it only really launches for real, like deliveries, like sometime next year. Right. So it's going to be a while before any of us gets to drive one.
I mean, they're out there in the public right now. And oh, you mean a Sapphire? Excuse me.
Yeah, Sapphire.
Regular. I'm just talking about Lucid in general. It's something that's an unknown quantity to me, at least.
Right.
I'll come along and be dad now and remind you they made 1,400 cars in the first half of the year, and Tesla could make 1.5 million. Not that we should compare those two companies, just that that we need a dose of reality sometime, that it's a quarter of a million pound car that's coming next year. And you know, Peter Rawlinson is doing an Elon and going down to the factory floor to try and work this out, because it's not going well at the minute. They'll fix it. They've got amazing people there. They've got some incredible people, making the Lucid, and they've got all the money, and they're not going to run out of cash, and they can fund themselves through to it. But that's kind of where I am with Lucid and Rivian, and then the next tranche of, hey, we're going to be massive companies, the ones that have done SPACs, the ones that have talked a big game. And I'm ready to say, all right, are you all mouth and no trousers? Or what have you got? Bring it or don't. So that's what Lucid can make a huge success of it, but they've got to get past making 1,400 cars in 6 months.
Yeah, that's true. So, to get,
and they will, and they will. But this sideshow is cool to talk about. But that's the action for Lucid, as Carl started the conversation off. It's not in the new stuff that's coming. All the action is, what are they, you know, those processes they're fixing today and tomorrow, and then how they refine that process and make it better and better. All the stuff about new factories, new cars, and it all will happen because they've got so much funding because of their float. So,
right. Well said.
Yeah. Definitely a little bit of, don't look at that, look at this going on right now, you know? Sure. And, you know, Tesla did that all the time too. You know, Elon was famous for getting up on stage and introducing a robot or, you know, something, you know, when there was something else going on. But I think there's a little bit of that going on over at Lucid right now. Yeah, don't worry about how many cars we're making. Look at this tri-motor thing is awesome, right? So, but they all do it.
All right. So, let's move on. So, good news. Yesterday, Ford announced that it is reopening U.S. order banks so that if you've been waiting to order a Mustang Mach-E from the factory, now is your chance. Bad news, it's going to cost more. The base model is up $3,000, and some other trims get even larger increases. Good news, premium all-wheel drive models built with extended battery models get 13 additional miles of range, and Ford has added a Night Pony appearance package and a couple new colors. So, Tom, I love the extra range, and now Copilot 360 driver assist is now standard across the line as well. Are these enough to make up for this price increase?
it's a tough pill to swallow. It's the Mach-E is an expensive electric vehicle now when you really look at it, and especially if you want the extended range battery pack. It's an expensive electric vehicle. It's a good electric vehicle. I really like the Mach-E, but it's up there now. And, you know, it's similar to what Ford just did with the Lightning. Evidently, you know, Ford's, you know, had margins that they couldn't live with how the cost of their materials has gone up on their, specifically on their electric vehicles. You notice we didn't see them raising the price across the board for their ICE vehicles during supply chain issues. They're having supply chain problems with those vehicles also. Evidently, the components and the batteries and things that they need for the electric vehicles are going up at a higher rate than for the other vehicles. So it's still a great car, but it's tough pill to swallow now. And we just still don't know how this new tax credit is going to affect Mach-E, what it's going to qualify for. I think it's a tough pill to swallow. I only think Ford's probably only doing this because they're selling everyone that they could make. So they feel like they can get away with this. If the demand was really low on these, they would probably take a loss on them and not raise the prices. I don't think they're price gouging for it. I think they're trying to get their margins in line with what it is with their other vehicles. And the fact that they're selling everyone they can make, they're saying, well, evidently, you know, supply and demand is telling us we can get this in line with the cost of what our other vehicles are. We've seen this on Tesla. How many times has Tesla raised their prices in the last?
So many times.
You know, since COVID started. I mean, we can't even count how many times they've raised their prices.
Maybe.
Yeah, they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't have a queue of people waiting for the car. So, you know, it kind of tells you that the Mach-E's in high demand, and Ford feels that they can do this and still sell everyone that they make.
Yeah, it's not a bad news. I'll Kyle tune in or give his opinion before I say something else.
Yeah, getting expensive. I think everything Tom said is right on the money. You know, at the end of the day, it's hard to buy these cars. And it's pretty, honestly, to me, how many people will spend so much more money on an electric vehicle than they ever have on a combustion vehicle before. I know many people whose Mach-E, whose Ioniq 5, whose EV6, whose XC40 Recharge is the most expensive vehicle they've ever bought by a huge margin. So we know there's plenty of buyers coming up to spend and to get one of these nice electric cars. And yeah, you can't blame Ford at all. And look, the dealers are already charging 10, 15, 20 over anyway. They can get it. Why not, why let the dealers take all the profit from that?
That's a fair point, I guess. The only thing I'm wondering about is, so about a month ago, maybe less, maybe 3 weeks ago, Elon Musk said on Twitter that commodity prices were going down and Tesla prices had gone up a ridiculous amount, you know? And so I have this suspicion that because inflation is tapering off, commodity prices are going down somewhat, Tesla might be reactive and lower their prices just as everybody else is like raising theirs because they're kind of premium price premium super now, but I have a feeling they're going to chop off a good $5,000-$6,000 off, say like a Model Y, and become super competitive again in the price.
I don't know if, have you guys seen the news of the Standard Range in Europe? Or is that on your list?
Not on the list, but no.
Fill us in.
Tell us.
So in Europe, Tesla just announced they're bringing back the Model Y Standard Range, which has a range of, let's just see really quick. It starts at 42,000 euros, and it's a range of 283 miles WLTP. So that's like 230 miles EPA, something like that. I think it might actually be the same standard range that was on sale in the US for a very short period of time. And honestly, that's the way to go. It's 0 to 100 kph in 6.9 seconds. When you talk about this acceleration, it doesn't matter. They're all fast enough. And I think, look, we're seeing it right here. There's a point. Tesla's getting cheaper in Europe, at least.
That's the one I would order. Made in Germany, BYD batteries. So these are the BYD Blade batteries, lithium iron phosphate chemistry. So very flexible, very durable. Charge it to 100%. Not the most energy dense, but it's the standard range, which is fine. Now, the BYD Blade batteries that go into the BYD Song, it's an 800 volt platform. So I wonder whether this is their first move into 800 volt. And at some point they'll have to. Cybertruck will be 800 volt. They'll have to upgrade the superchargers one day. But really closely watching this. Remember, in the US, the cheapest you can get into a Tesla is $47,000 for a bog standard Model 3. So as the inflation of what people think they have to spend to get a Tesla just keeps going up and up. But yeah. Hey, can I tell you a quick Mach-E story, by the way, that I found funny this week?
Sure.
I popped into a pick up some supplies, just groceries, one of those petrol stations that has all the extras as well. So we have a supermarket chain called Co-op, and there's often those with a petrol station. It's one of those kind of petrol stations, but also with a semi-decent sized supermarket attached to it. They'll do one of everything. And I pulled in, they've always got the petrol pumps, and then they've got where you park your, next to the tire inflators and stuff. And I pulled in there. And a Mach-E rolled in, stealth edition. So all black, windows tinted to the legal limit, black wheels, everything. It looked a beast. And it pulled up to a petrol pump, and the guy got out with as much swagger as you like, left his car there, went in. I followed him in. He was picking up milk, pizza, some salad. Like, we did our shopping. And I was parked in the car parking spaces, but I believe, in text language, I would say he DGAF. And he just left his car blocking a petrol pump. Now, kids, don't do that. It winds people up. But this fella didn't care. So well done him, or not well done him, for blocking a petrol pump with his very good-looking Mustang, by the way, Mustang Mach-E.
I saw a Tesla owner do this. It'll actually be in the next Out of Spec Motoring video. And it was so funny. They parked the car at the pump, walked in the store. There's a supercharger right there. Like, what's going on?
Maybe
he doesn't care.
Oh, you're on mute, Tom. Sorry.
So when a gas car blocks a charging station, we call it, you ice the charging station. Do we have a term for an EV blocking a gas pump?
Assault with battery?
I like zapped? That. I don't know.
Assault, Assault with a pattern.
We might have to come up with a term if people are going to do this, and but we hope they don't, because that's not cool. That's a blank move.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
All right. So anything else we want to say about the Mustang Mach-E? Let's roll along. All right. So this week, Tesla rolled out its latest FSD beta update to a limited number of owners to begin with, 1,000 of them. Now they get to, 1,000 of them get to see how much the software has improved. But just a word of advice, if you're in this group, don't say anything critical about it. You might get a terse tweet from Elon. But so I don't know if you've watched any of the FSD driving videos this week, but it can now do some pretty amazing things. But it still does some not so amazing things. So with 3 months left to the year, it's kind of hard to see how this could possibly become a legitimate level four system this year, as Musk has predicted or promulgated. But even if there was a consensus that it could achieve actual hands-free, eyes-free driving, is it worth $15,000, Kyle?
Well, so if the technology works safely where you don't have to have your hands or eyes on the road, I would pay $15,000 for that, actually. I think that'd be really fun to watch how the car operates and everything. The problem is we're very much in the gray area of the driver needs to maintain total control over the vehicle in all environments, regardless of everything you're hearing online. It's still a very much, attention on system. And while I'm not so well versed in the newest software update, I am going to make a video with it when I am back in the US. Every major update, I promised I'd go and do a little, just our experience. We're not here to do, full evaluations on Tesla's FSD. That's not our world. There's plenty of other people doing it. And I think a lot of people, I've said it a million times, really amazing technology to watch it work, really dangerous in the wrong hands. So let's stay reasonable when we're out there testing this stuff.
John Check says, we're all kabuzzled with this on the FSD update. I'm not sure what kabuzzled means, but I've never heard that expression before. But anyway, I wanted to share. Martin has pulled up a tweet from some account on Twitter called EV News Daily Podcast, which I believe he may know the owner of that.
Apparently.
And the tweet says, no, you may not complain about the feature you just spent $12,000 on, which doesn't work. Yeah, so that was part of the story, is that a gentleman who I follow, James Locke, he's been doing testing, and I don't think he paid $12,000 for it. I think he got in when it was still a lot cheaper than that. I forget exactly how much it was when he bought in, but he's been doing these videos for quite a while, and he's a very reasonable guy. Very much on board with Team Tesla, and he does some good videos, but he had a little bit of criticism about this one. Not as bad, but it's just he still has to intervene, in this one little section, this route that he does, so it's not it's not there, so to speak, yet. And
sorry, there was a bee walking around for any of our viewers. I hate bees.
It was walking. German bees walk.
Oh, look.
I guess it was. You're right. I stand corrected. Bees walk in Germany. They don't fly, I guess. So talking about bugs, I was recording my I know I'm digressing here. I was recording a video, which is going to be up on my channel tomorrow, about my 10 likes and dislikes on my F-150 Lightning. And I had the door open, and I'm recording myself in the truck. And I don't know if anybody's heard about these spotted lantern flies. They're like invading the country. It's like this Asian bug. And here in the Northeast, there's like millions of them now. And they kill the trees and everything. And your urge to kill them is whenever you can see them. And as in the middle of flying, the thing flew in the truck and like landed on my nose. And I'm like, of course, I edited it out. But then later on, after I deleted that part of the clip, I was like, I really should have left that in because it looked hilarious, but it's too late now. I have the video all done. But I just thought of that when Kyle was talking about it. He really doesn't like bees. He moved.
No, I really hate any kind of bugs, but really hate bees. I'm not allergic to them, but I'm just, I see a bee, I start going the other way. And the problem is there's so many bees in Germany.
That's good. We need bees.
Yeah, because they don't use everyone tells me. Roundup.
Well, I'd rather just have no environment and kill the bees. I know it's a controversial statement.
All right. So getting back to Tesla and autopilots and all that kind of stuff, they also brought back enhanced autopilot for $6,000. So enhanced autopilot. So you get autopilot for free on every Tesla you order. But if you want enhanced autopilot, you can pay $6,000, and that adds Tesla's Navigate on Autopilot feature, which allows the car to enter and exit the freeway and make its own lane changes accordingly. It also includes Tesla's Auto Park and Summon features. So, yeah, I don't know how $6,000 for that. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Not at all. Kyle's saying no. Great lane centering. It's great as is. The only majorly useful thing, at least to me, in that is auto lane change, which I might spend $500 or $1,000 on here or there. But right. I'm not going to spend even $6,000 for enhanced autopilot, let alone $15 for FSD.
Right. And I really like the – I personally kind of like the idea of Summon. I don't know how well it works and things, but I live in Florida where we get crazy like downpours like every day in the summertime.
You only use it to show your friends. That's the only time someone's ever active on a Tesla is watch this, and then you watch it drive over a curb in a parking lot, which happened to me when I tried to show someone how Summon worked.
Right.
Well, I've had a dozen people give me their show me their Summon feature because I don't have it on mine. Okay. And honestly, it has never worked. Never. Not once have they completed like on the first attempt. Where the car comes and pulls up fine. Now, some of them were tricky situations, but that's how you park. You know, it's not like you're going to park 30 feet away and it's just a perfect straight drive to where you are. So, you know, I don't know. I like autopilot that I have in my Model 3. I use it all the time. And to me, there's just, it's that. And then there's when I can get my car and say, take me to work, and then just open up my laptop and not even look. There's nothing in between. I'm not interested in any of this. And I still think it's crazy that Tesla's releasing these versions and letting people, you know, be their beta testers, which is what they are, you know, and I know it's going to get it to where they want it to go faster by having thousands of people, not just engineers, regular people doing this. It's probably good for like the artificial intelligence and the learning of it. But I wouldn't participate in it. No way. And, you know, $15,000 for what it is now is just insane. You know, when it's done and you can get in it and, like I said, say, you know, take me to ShopRite or take me to the supermarket. You know, I could see that being a $10,000 feature. But, you know, we're already at $15,000. And it stinks, and you have to monitor it all the time. You have to be ready to jump right in. It's just crazy. It's crazy that this is going on. I can't believe we don't have a class action lawsuit against Tesla yet. People that bought the cars, paid for full self-driving, and then, you know, sold the car 4 years later, never even got to use anything. Or I didn't hear about it. When they sell it, doesn't it get removed? The next buyer doesn't get it?
It's a genius business plan that if you sell your car and buy a used one off Tesla, they just turn off the software because they can. And that's brilliant. They can then charge for it again and again and again. And that's a great business plan for them.
Kyle said it depends. So is there a way you can keep it, Kyle?
Yeah. So it's just like if they go to resell that car, sometimes it retains FSD. They can just, it's just a switch for them. The thing is, if they've said it's $15,000 and on every Tesla you have for eternity, you get to keep the software, I would probably buy it because I think that's kind of cool. And I would watch the progression. The thing is, either cars get crashed, as in the case of my Plaid, or I switch cars so much, I'm going to want to buy every new Tesla that comes out. That's $15,000 a pop for like the next every 2 years. I don't want to do that. If they said buy it now, and you can move this to the next vehicle, A, it would keep me buying Teslas, and B, I actually, am a little bit different in Tom, where I don't necessarily agree with the way they're rolling out the software and how this is all working, but I'm fascinated by it and I want to experience it to see what they're doing. But I don't necessarily want to promote it and make a whole bunch of videos about it because it's just not my niche, right. At least not yet. So, yeah.
And the thing is, you don't need crowdsourced information to make it work. Mercedes-Benz have rolled out Drive Pilot in Europe. They did that by getting the technology right, working with regulators, and now on approved sections of the highway up to 37 miles an hour, it is legally, officially a level 3 system. You can take hands off.
Yeah, but it's basically useless. It's like, when are you ever going?
Eyes off.
It's like on two stretches of road, and it's only up to 37.
Right. So if you're in a traffic jam,
but that is the way to do it, is to work with regulators, to those that worry about liability and safety, and get the technology right and get it on the roads. What's not right is I saw this week or last week, somebody put a freedom of information request into your NHTSA, your regulator, for the documents around full self-driving beta, and they had to publish the correspondence with Tesla, where they had emailed their contact at Tesla to say, hey, look, our safety score is 99. When are we going to get it? And I responded to that on social media to say, that's not how a regulator works, America.
Oh, hey, right.
You don't say, Elon, can we please have this? We've got a 99 score, we haven't got it yet. You're the regulator of that industry that right. business wants to enter. And there's regulated industries and telecommunications and broadcast, etc. I can't launch a TV channel and then at some point our regulator Ofcom, you know, who regulate broadcast, go, oh, can you tell us like what you do? What? That's insanity. So, and that's why they haven't raised prices of FSD over here in Europe. There's no FSD beta. And it doesn't work the way it works for you guys in the US, because the EU regulators are much more cautious in terms of allowing what companies do. And I know Carl might say that the Drive Pilot in the Merc, you know, is effectively useless on two stretches of German highway, but at least it's a start. And because it's done right, they take on the legal liability. So up to 37 miles an hour, hands off, eyes off, you are allowed in traffic to do something else as long as you're in the car, apart from fall asleep. And it's Mercedes-Benz liability.
Right.
But that's the right way to do it. So the wrong way to do it is to give it to a bunch of YouTubers and then in some way think that that is the way to roll out safety. And that's nothing against the YouTubers who clearly love the company and love it. And like they're doing nothing wrong. Like they're just into stuff like a hobby or knitting or whatever. Like it's just their thing. So it's not their fault. It's definitely the regulator's fault. And Tesla's fault. It's just not the way you should do it.
Well, it's also like, are they actually getting even useful feedback, or do they even want it? How this all started, which is, you know, if you know, the whole point of beta testing is to, here's what's wrong, here's what we found, and let's fix it in the next version. And, you know, this whole conversation started with someone basically doing that and Elon saying, oh, don't complain. That's not how this works.
Hmm.
Right. But yeah, the whole thing's pretty crazy, really. I'm just surprised you can get people to pay you, you know, thousands of dollars to help you develop your own software. I mean, it's kind of nuts in a way, because that's basically what they're doing. People are paying a lot of money to help Tesla develop its full self-driving software. And I would never have thought of that as a business model. You know, but,
and then you get slapped back if you complain about it
right,
publicly.
Yeah. Right, and
I wonder if his beta is going to get yanked.
Maybe Elon was just in a bad mood, or just took it the wrong. I don't know why he responded that way. It seemed kind of weird. Even yeah, I was going
to
say.
Hey, buddy, Elon, Kyle and I object to that comment.
John says, "Dom, you're right. Thank you. I'm not sure what I'm right about, but okay.
Take it." Take that as the
just
win.
Can take it and go. So let's move on though. Let's talk about Rivian a little bit because they're having a week as well. So Rivian also had a trim update this week. It's dropped the level entry Explore package, forcing people to upgrade to the Adventure package. it says only a small percentage had ordered Explorer. They had wanted to have, you know, an entry level package to help people get into it, but it wasn't apparently that popular. So they're eliminating it to streamline production and help them build vehicles faster. So this would seem to be like to increase the price for people who ordered the Explorer by $7,500. But for its part, Rivian says customers who signed binding agreements recently will get their deposits back should they decide to cancel their orders. Because they asked recently to sign a binding agreement to buy so they can take advantage of the $7,500 tax credit, which will go away because they have the new tax credit system coming in. So if you, you will get your deposit back should they decide to cancel orders. For those who wish to reconfigure and move up to the adventure package, Rivian claims that most of them will see a $5,500 price difference. Now, I'm not sure exactly why they say 55, but we were saying 75, but maybe one of you guys know a little bit more than I do. It's a bit of bad news for some consumers, but on the bright side, its Ocean Coast interior is now shipping, which I know that Kyle loves. So if you like Kyle, light colored seats with dark wood trim, you're in luck. So, Kyle, are you tempted to order an Ocean Coast?
Oh, I did. I ordered an R1S and another R1T because that interior is so nice.
It is nice. That's crazy. You're ordering. You're gonna need a big garage.
Yeah, but I don't know. We can't keep three Rivians. That's way too excessive.
Right.
So I think the idea is, by the time these come in years from now, we're talking, I would want the Max Pack, all the stuff. This is way, you know, just thinking ahead, first time ever for me, thinking, okay, our truck, I promised never to sell more than what we paid for it. So that would go to a family member or someone who works for us or something like that. And then I think we got to cover the Max Pack when that comes in, just from a content standpoint. People are going to be interested in that big battery pack and the things we can do. So basically we'll learn everything from our current truck, get the Max Pack. And honestly, Alyssa's really loving the R1S over the e-tron. So we just wanted to have that option.
But she hasn't driven the R1S though, right?
No, but it drives just like the R1T.
Right.
So
right.
It's just true. a little bit spicier, as Tom said.
Right. And shorter wheelbase. Nice. Yeah.
So I have an order for an R1T and I spoke with my
$1 million 300 SL Roadster pulling in.
Ooh, hello.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's really nice. Oh, and a nice EQC coming as well.
Very cool.
Yeah, sorry to derail. I apologize.
That's okay.
So I was going to say I spoke with my Rivian, I think they're called guides, yes. I forget, this week. And I wanted to find out about the Ocean Coast interior because I had ordered my R1T with the Ocean Coast interior, but I was basically told by Rivian that, okay, if you want to hold on to that Ocean Coast interior, you're not getting it for a very long time because they were having trouble with the supplier that made the wood for the Ocean Coast interior on the dashboard. So there were, you know, they just kind of gave me a heads up. They said, Tom, you know, you can wait, but it's, you know, going to be a very long time. They were leading me to believe it definitely wouldn't be this year and it would be well into next year. So I switched my configuration to the darker color. Not, I didn't get the forest. I got the base, the black color. So now that they changed the Ocean Coast and they eliminated the lighter colored wood. So you get the same seats that you had in the Ocean Coast, except they eliminated the part that they couldn't get. That was their supply chain problem, which was the lighter colored wood trim. And you get the same colored wood trim in the dash now as you do for the black interior. So, you know, but you get the light seats. So I called up and said, look, I'd like to switch back to Ocean Coast. Because, and so that wasn't a problem. And what I also noticed is that, and I haven't checked my configuration in a while, I ordered the camp kitchen. They've removed it from my order. I know what they were doing for a while was charging you for it and saying when, you know, pay us for it. And then when it comes in, we'll install it. But they've changed that. Now they just take it off your order. So my order got $5,000 less expensive. And when if I do take possession of it before it comes in, which it sounds like I'm going to, then I would simply call Rivian or online, order a camp kitchen and go and have it installed. So they're not even tethering it to your purchase anymore. So, Ryan from the Kilowatts, I was talking to him about this a couple of days ago, and it was different with him. He paid for it and bundled it into the cost of his vehicle, and they owe it to him. But now it seems like they're not doing that anymore. They just pull it from your order. So, it sounds like I'm probably going to be in the next couple of months, maybe October-ish is when I should be getting mine. Hopefully, we'll see. I've had a reservation for a long time now, and it looks like it's going to be coming up.
You know, another thing about removing this camp kitchen situation and other accessories as well is if you're leasing it, you can't, I don't know if they offer leasing, I don't think they do, but you can't bundle it into your lease. Or if you're financing it, now you can't finance that component of the truck, which is what I think a lot of people's intentions were.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why it was good. Some people wanted it bundled in with the truck. And I was actually on another YouTube live chat about this recently, a few days ago. And my answer to that was, because somebody was saying, yeah, but now you can't bundle it into the cost of your truck and you can't lease the whole thing. Honestly, it's a $90,000 plus truck. And if that's a problem for you, and I certainly don't want to make this sound like I'm talking down to people, because I'm not at all. But if you can't afford $5,000, you shouldn't be buying a $90,000 truck. If you need to finance every penny of it, like maybe you shouldn't be buying a $90,000 truck. I know we all like to get something that maybe stretch our budget or whatever, but that's, a $90,000 truck, a $5,000 purchase isn't terribly expensive. And if you, especially if you have to do it months after you put money down on the truck, I know it makes it cleaner if you could just roll it into one payment or whatever, but I mean, seriously, it's you could easily outfit it to get to $100,000, especially now with the price increases. So I think that $5,000 purchase shouldn't be a big problem for you.
So Tom, do you know when they're going to actually start delivering Camp Kitchen? Because of course, I mean, I think there's a million people who want them. Do you have any info as to when delivery start?
No, and they couldn't give me any information on when. So it sounds to me like it's going to be a while. So that's the feeling I got when they just pulled it from my order. If it was close, if it was coming a couple of months down the road, they would have just kept it on the order, took my money and said, okay, in December, we'll call you back to the service center and you can come pick this thing up. But since they just took it off the order, that gives me the idea that they're not even close to being able to deliver these. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but because I can't wait to have some fun with it. But it, that's what I got from it. That because initially, as I said, they were allowing you to bundle it in with the cost of the vehicle. Why did they stop doing that? Why did they just say, okay, it's not even offered anymore? You can't order it. That can't mean because it's close to coming.
Right. We don't know how far away the camp kitchen is, do we? Like when it's going to start shipping?
No, that's what Kyle just asked. I have zero indication of that. Hmm. And my Rivian guide couldn't guide me in the right direction.
All right.
I don't know if you guys hear noise. Can you hear in the background here?
Squeaky, squeaky.
There's people working at my house. So
okay.
This is the upgrade project.
Yeah, we're going to get to that really soon.
That. Yeah.
Because we're going to get a couple stories we're going to hit real quick, but then we're going to, let's actually, anything here we want to talk about more? So let's stop with Rivian.
Flying boat batteries. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, if you like electric boats, I'll just like the opportunity to talk about Candela, which is a really interesting boat company, and they use so Polestar is going to they've been developing their electric boat for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. It seems like I've been following them. They have a great Facebook and Twitter account. You can follow their development things, but they're on the water. They're using the, what do you call that again? That system?
No idea.
It's slipping my mind.
Hydrofoil?
Yeah. Yes. The hydrofoils. So the main, the mass of the hull isn't in the water. So you have a lot less resistance, so you can get much better range and speed out of your electric boat. So it's a great solution for electrics because, a range just driving on water is can be pretty inefficient depending on, you know, how fast you want to go. And anyway, so
I really like, do we know anyone that's made a video with one of these? Has Bjorn filmed this yet?
I think Fully Charged might have some content, okay, but I'm not positive. But I bet you if you went up there or give them a ring, they'd be happy to have you check
things
out.
Yeah, well, I'm going up to Stockholm in a few days, so I was thinking that would be kind of cool to see them because I think that's where they are.
Yeah, before it gets cold.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's still, like, no, nice to be out on the water. Definitely do that. Oh, yeah. So other news, Tritium opens a new DC fast charger factory in Tennessee. So we had the announcement about this earlier this year, and now I believe it's open. They're going to start with building like just the slower chargers, like I believe it was a 100 or 125 kilowatts shareable. So like 75 watts a side if you have two people pulling up. Maybe they're even starting with something even slower than that, actually.
I think great hardware. I've never had a problem with their hardware, and I think that they, my experience personally of the Tritium stuff is brilliant. More of it, please.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard good things about it, and they're originally, I believe, from New Zealand.
Aussie.
Aussie? Okay. That's Australia?
I believe they're an Australian company, yeah. So,
okay.
But always had a great experience. Not always the biggest, flashiest screen, not always the fanciest interface, but I find Tritium stuff really good.
Do you use the 350 kilowatt chargers?
No, 50s.
Okay. So, right, they make a range. Well, they're going to make 350 kilowatt cabinets here, but it sounds like it's going to be a while before that happens. But there's going to be, like, the scale is, like, up to 30,000 a year, I believe, they want to be able to start producing. So we need a lot of chargers. 30,000 units a year is a lot of chargers. So it's a beginning, I think. Either Ariana says 75 kilowatts to start, then 150, then 350. Thank you.
Yeah, 50s and 75s to start is what they're, is what they're making right now.
I should have written out the details in my notes last night, but I did not. okay. Also, in the news this week, California has adopted a 2035 sales ban on new ICE cars. So after 2035, like 13 years from now, you can't buy a brand new ICE car in California, apparently. But there's probably a lot of opinions about this, so mine is just okay, whatever, it's fine, but no one's going to want to buy a gas car in 2035 anyway. But I'm not sure if a ban's really help. Yeah, I think I almost feel like it strikes a lot of people the wrong way, and it'll just make them feel more contrary about, you know, changing.
It's important to do it. It's important to do it so people get the message. Bans are dumb in that we shouldn't be told what we can and can't buy. We should have all the information, like cigarettes, presented to us. So let's not go back to the 50s, thanks, when doctors prescribe cigarettes. But give us all the information and we'll make a choice, right? If something's harmful, I like a beer. I know it's not best for me. Bans are dumb, but bans are important because it changes public perception. So let's not ban combustion, thanks, because it would be nice in 2035 to go and still buy something interesting, or, you know, a two-stroke bike or something bonkers and crazy. But so let's not ban it, but let's just, you do need the bans, unfortunately, and that's what China, the EU and California have led around the world, because it changes public perception, and also it gives businesses a clear direction of travel. And all a business wants, apart from the ones that are ideologically led, any business just wants certainty, and they'll make investment decisions based upon that certainty. So you do need them, but we shouldn't have them. But you do need them.
Chauncey Snodgrass? I'm not sure if that's his real name. maybe, it might be, though. Who knows? Anyway, he asked, does 2035 ban include plug-in hybrid electric vehicles? And I believe it does not. So, you know, you'll still be able to buy some cars with electric or with combustion engines, but it will have an electric system as well. We could probably do a whole podcast talking about that, because there is really a lot involved there. But we have other things to talk about, like the fact that 2022 Mazda MX-30 is sold out. If you wanted a Mazda MX-30, I'm sorry, but you are now out of luck, at least for this year.
500 of them.
Dominic, I think in order to order one, you actually are already out of luck.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, or yeah, you could be like in an income bracket like me, and that's this is your choice.
No, this is too expensive.
Actually,
also, isn't it? I saw an MX-30 on the highway in Sweden yesterday, but okay. It was actually the rotary hybrid one.
Oh, the range extended version.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, cool.
We don't get that in the US yet.
Well, we were supposed to, but I don't know what's going on with them now.
Who knows what's going on there? It's ridiculous.
I did have notes on this. Now I don't see them. But so the MX-30, they were supposed to make 560 of them in 2021. So they didn't sell those in 2021. So this is like, they were supposed to make another couple thousand for 2022, and they didn't end up doing that because they didn't sell the ones they had previously. So this is like, this is bad. This is just really, really bad for you know, I don't know. Maybe this is what they, this is worse than what they intended, which were already, you know, it was a low bar that they were trying to.
No, I think they proved their point. They're going to go, we're not going to put money into an EV because look what happened last time. No one bought it.
Right. I mean, but then what are you going to sell in California in 2035, you know, or in Europe in 2030? Or...
Well, do you really think those bands are going to be there in 2025 or 2030? I don't see that being realistic. They're going to get pushed, I think. That's my prediction.
They could, but I don't, I think electrification is going to happen a lot faster than that. And I don't think there'll be a need for a ban, really. I don't think there's really a need for a ban now. Just to get the message to automakers that, you know, if you haven't, it's time to stop dragging your feet if you want to sell cars in the future.
The Mazda MX-30 is somebody starting in the office on their first day at work, and it's their round to make a cup of teas for everyone. And they come back and they've made the worst round of teas. They're either too strong or there's not enough milk. And that person never gets asked to make a round of teas again. That's what the Mazda MX-30 is. That is Mazda going, oh, we tried to make an EV. Sorry, did we screw up? We're really, really sorry. Don't ask us to make another one. That's exactly
what only an English person would make this analogy.
Right.
Just trying to explain it in different terms. How bad the reason they made this car. It's to prove themselves right.
Well, it's a shame it's so much, though.
It's like the BZ4X, which you can't buy because the wheels are falling off of it. So
that was Toyota's playbook forever. You know, that, you know, nobody would make these cars, but nobody wants them. And then they'd make a short run RAV4, you know, and make 2,000 of them and say, oh, geez, look, we only sold 2,000 of them. Nobody wanted them. I mean, that was Toyota's playbook for years. So Mazda, I guess, feels that they could follow in that footstep. We'll see how that works out for them.
Scott S says, just like the Beastie Boys, it's sabotage.
Buddy says, milk does not belong in tea. Buddy, we're going to fall out, my friend.
Even Japan, they like, it's not just England. They do that in Canada. In Japan, they have milk tea is like a thing. Yeah, a popular thing.
Good.
All right. So let's talk about what we've been driving this week. See, Kyle, you were in the VW ID Buzz, but you can't tell us about, you know, the driving impressions yet, because those are still under embargo for a week or so. But other things that you'd like to tell us about the ID Buzz? Because we're kind of jealous that you got to do this and we did not.
Yeah. So, first of all, really, there was only 10 Americans that got to go because it's not for our market. Right. You know, we're not getting this version of the ID Buzz. So I think maybe us expanding into Europe had some help with this, the reason we got.
There's a picture of, we can't hear Kyle right now. He's frozen, but we can see this picture of him. Oh, you're back.
That's right. There you go. You're back.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. So basically it was a very small American drive, but big for the rest of the markets because we're only getting the long wheelbase, not the short wheelbase. I have to say the standard wheelbase, like I said in the video I made about it a few weeks ago, it still feels quite large. And, you know, you could definitely put everything you want in there. The cargo version was so cool. Really like it on these 18-inch wheels. This was really the base spec version of the cargo. And they also have a slide-in camper that goes in the back, which I think is really interesting. You can pull out a little grill and they have water storage. You can cook up some stuff. So yeah, they're really going all in. I made a whole video actually about the media drive and the things we were able to do and how Volkswagen presented it. And I think it's worth a watch if you're curious to see what it's like going on these events. This was definitely the best one I had ever gone on. And they really just took over the whole city of Copenhagen with ID buzzes. It was so cool. You ask anyone in the city, like, and they're like, what's going on with all these buzzes? They're so cool. So it really, I think, brightened the mood of Copenhagen.
And that's on your Out of Spec Reviews channel, I believe, right?
Yep, that's on Out of Spec Reviews. And it's just basically my whole day with the omission of driving impressions. And I think I said it about 60 times to keep reminding myself, I can't tell you how it drives.
right. So anyone have any ID Buzz questions that they think Kyle is allowed to answer?
I love that you took the ID Buzz to go visit your friends at Polestar. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, well, and
I mean, you needed a car, so you just took the ID Buzz and then went and saw your friends. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it was awesome. And they had a Polestar Precept. And so, like, that's way cooler than pretty much anything in there. So I got to have a little picture of them both in the same area, which was pretty neat.
Nice. Tom.
Yeah, there's Morten. He runs the Polestar store in Copenhagen. He's owned a Tesla previously, has a YouTube channel about electric cars, super nerd like us. And great to have friends in different countries from this YouTube thing. And he actually loaned me a Polestar 2 yesterday. I had it for the day, took it up to Gothenburg, went on a road trip in that. And yeah, it was super fun.
Kyle Hadley is asking, what do you think pricing will look like in the US? I believe he means for the Buzz.
Yep, expensive, I think.
Yeah, we have no idea indication on that yet, right?
No, I think we have an indication. It's not going to be cheap.
Right. Yeah, it's true. So it's not going to be just like a slightly more expensive ID4. It's going to be a chunk more expensive than ID4. Because ID4 is a pretty good deal thinking, right now.
Just go up.
With everybody else raising their prices, the Volkswagen ID4 is now a pretty sweet deal.
ID4, especially the localized one, if you wait a little bit, is a really sweet deal.
Yeah. So this is interesting that the ID Buzz Cargo in base spec gets two-tone paint.
So it just not in Europe, and so you have to pay up for that, and or maybe no charge. I don't actually know how the options go for different markets. In the US, we don't know how it'll be spec'd yet. I don't think they've finished the product guides for ours.
Right. In person,
but I do know that in the US, we're only getting two-tone, is what I heard.
Okay, so we won't have to make that choice decision. That's good.
I wouldn't take anything. Nothing's locked in, right? But this is the intention.
I see. In person, did you think the two-tone was, a better option than like monocolor?
Yeah, so you see that one on the right. It's a passenger version, right? With this dark blue and a white. I really loved that one. Actually, I thought it looked great blacked out too, but it doesn't fit the character of the ID Buzz. And so going with the bright yellow or the orange or the teal, that's more ID Buzz. And what I'm actually thinking about doing, and I have to look into it today, but I'm pretty sure they are starting deliveries very soon here in Germany. And now that we have a German physical location, we might be able to have one here, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be actually kind of.
That'd be a really cool out of spec like vehicle. Just to haul stuff around and everything. I mean, that'd be a great choice.
And then we'd be able to bring it to the U.S. for 364 days, and then they'd have to turn around and come back here for one day, and then we'd bring it back to the U.S.
But like the cargo, you could haul dogs, your equipment, all the stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do cargo or passenger, because you could just fold the seats down in the passenger one.
Yeah,
that would be a driving impression. Anyway, basically, yeah, we have options.
Okay.
Wow.
Sweet.
And in terms of the cargo, how, and the interior, not the driving impressions, but the interior fit and finish, how utilitarian is it versus the passenger one you drove?
Oh yeah, very utilitarian. It's bench seat. You have this metal thing behind you. And it's nice, but like even the whole dash is totally different. It's the same exact platform underneath. But I actually made two full videos. So the first day when the embargo lifts, you'll see my video of the passenger one. And then the day after, I made a video with the cargo one that will go up. And in at least in America, we're not going to be getting the cargo version, is my understanding. But I guess I could say if you're sitting standstill and try and look out the side of the van, you can't see too much, you know, at least through the back window. But that's not a driving impression. That's a standstill impression.
And how does it? We showed a shot from your video from Out of Spec Reviews a moment ago on the camping insert, which is, you know, simple. It's a bed and it's an oven. It's a grill and some water. But how does the ID Buzz in the US compare with the kind of van life vehicles that you have over there? Will it be used for that, or is it, I know everything you have is always bigger than ours, so is it too small?
Well, we don't know what the long wheelbase is really going to look or feel like from a suspension setup or anything like that yet. I would say the standard wheelbase is not set up really for camping. You know, everyone in the US is going crazy for van life, but they're all vans you can stand up inside of. They're like my Sprinter. If you drive around Colorado, you'll see 50 of my Sprinters on a corner. Like they're everywhere. This is by far not nearly as capable off-road, not nearly as spacious on the inside for that application. However, if you look at van life in Europe, totally different than the US, people really just have these small vans and they sleep inside of them. And so it works really well for this market. And I think in the US, you would need the pop top for it to catch on.
Yeah, we're used to much smaller vans. That's where like the heritage of the V-dubs, that it's we're used to something smaller.
Sorry, I'm just blocking. We have some spam in our chat.
Awesome. We got a ton of spam in our chat who love chat adult dating.
Trying to block them, but yeah. So Kyle, you also had the GV, the what is it? The Hyundai GV60 this week, and
Genesis, but yes.
Right. So I'm like trying to block this account, but I'm getting users anyway. So yeah, you did two videos while you're, you know, in the US with the GV60, a highway range test and a driving dynamics. Let's start with a highway range test. So the GV60. As most of us probably know, is on the same EGMP platform as the Kia EV6 and the Hyundai Ioniq 5. The GV60 is kind of nice, a little more posh. It's got the crystal sphere, which I want to hear about. But yeah, range test.
Yeah, so just did the typical 70-mile-an-hour test that Tom and I do with every car. This I thought was going to be the least efficient EGMP car we tested because it A, has two big motors, which is the first of the beefier drivetrains that we have driven. It was on the biggest wheels that we had driven. It has the most stuff on the inside. It's the GV60 performance. And it actually ended up doing about 10 miles better than our Ioniq 5 test. Now, keep in mind, the temperatures are totally different. So I think what we really need to do is we need to get an EV6, an Ioniq 5, and GV60, all with the same spec, same size wheels, and run them down the same road at the same time to really, you know, when we start getting into 8-mile difference, 10-mile difference over a 240-mile stretch, you know, these are all just, they all go about the same, roughly, as far as you would need to go in daily driving, I think. But yeah, I would say very good, impressive result considering it matched its EPA combined rating on the highway. And but it was perfect conditions. Like it was, everything was set up for this thing to just go, and it certainly did that. So yeah, it's funny, my mom actually drives this car, not this exact one, she has a white one, and and she loves it. So you know, there's a buyer out there for this thing for sure. It's very expensive, and I think it would be better if they called it, if they just took performance out of the name.
The performance is in the name, GV60 Performance?
Yes, that's what it's technically called.
Okay.
Because you can get the non-performance version, but the one I tested was the performance.
It would there be a range difference, you think, between the performance and non-performance?
Yeah, totally different front motor, different wheels, the whole bit.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah,
so the all-wheel drive one has the same 160 kilowatt front motor, but gets a 74 kilowatt front motor. This one has two 160 kilowatt front motor, or 260 kilowatt motors each.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Both have clutch disconnects because there's a permanent magnet motor up there, but different wheels. So yeah, the results will be different between all-wheel drive and performance, but yep, for sure.
Right on. So what, I missed that number, actually. What was the, your final number?
235, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
Yeah, which is what it's EPA rated for, and it did it on the highway.
Okay. You
know, these cars these cars are not range monsters. They're charging monsters. True. So it's like they put a little bit of a smaller battery pack in all the EGMP cars. None of them go actually crazy far. I think the EV6 was the farthest I tested was 250 miles in the all-wheel drive form. The rear-wheel drive should do a little bit better, a lot of bit better according to EPA, but I don't buy it. Basically, yeah, they just charge like monsters. So that's the benefit of them.
Right. For some reason, I keep forgetting that. I always think of them as like 280 mile cars, but that's not at all the case. Some of them can go like 300 miles of rear wheel drive. And...
Well, according to the EPA, but we've never run a rear wheel drive in our 70 mile an hour test, because the only difference at that point would be the front motor, which gets disconnected, which has a tiny bit of drivetrain loss and a tiny bit of weight up front. So what we really need to do is take a rear wheel drive and an all wheel drive also on the same configuration, and run them back to back and see what that difference is, because I think they must be doing the EPA cycles weird, or the cars go into a weird mode, because there's no way you get a 50 mile deficit by having a front motor that disconnects itself.
True. Right. That doesn't seem to make sense.
What do you think, Tom? Because we've had this discussion too.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of it either. It's weird. We have to do is what you're suggesting, get the different versions and run them side by side. I don't understand why it's so much. I just did the all-wheel drive GT Line EV6 in similar conditions to what you just tested your vehicle in. And I did 245. So it's right in that same ballpark. You would expect the Genesis to get a little bit less. So, you know, I think that's what your highway range is going to look like for these vehicles, right in the 235, 245 mile range for the all-wheel drive versions. The rear-wheel drive, you know, I've been requesting them, and, you know, they just don't have them in press fleets to give out yet. But we need to try to figure out what the big disparity is.
Yeah, we've had a lot of viewers reach out that say, hey, I have a rear-wheel drive, but they're like, I live in Florida or I live in Arizona. Yeah. And like everyone in Colorado gets an all-wheel drive, of course, because it's a mountain state. So it's been kind of difficult trying to track down the media vehicle all-wheel drive with a viewer car in the same place.
Right. So tell us about the driving dynamics a little bit.
Yeah, so like I said, I think the GV60, it should be called the high output instead of the performance. To me, performance is a well-rounded approach to making the car handle better. And and it certainly has more output. And they've done total chassis changes, bigger brakes for the performance. So they've really upsized a bunch. But it's so softly tuned. They understood their target buyer. This is a Genesis for someone like my mom, and they built it for that application. But it had performance in the name, so I took it up in the canyons and drove it really hard. By the way, 306 kilowatt regen peak on this car. Insane. The only thing that regens more is the Hummer EV, which I think I got 312 out of. So just an insane, like, EGMP is just world class. It blows pretty much everything out of the water, in my opinion. And they put a limited slip diff on the rear axle in the performance. So it's got the kit. It's just like so dialed back. And what it really is like, okay, that means EV6 GT and IONIQ 5N are going to be the next step up from this. And I think they're going to make them hardcore, and they're going to be legendary. It just, that's my impression from driving this car, because it just felt like there was so much headroom. It needed so much more tire. It needed, honestly, the brakes were okay, but we did end up getting them smoking, and needed better rear axle control. But you know, cruising 5, 6, 7 tenths on the back road, it's just not what it's meant for. It didn't really love it. It's a great highway cruiser. You hit the boost mode and you floor it, and that's what it's good for, straight line acceleration. Cornering and handling, it was really a boat, but it was well composed, just very soft, kind of like a Lucid Air.
Right. This maybe sound like a silly question, but how do you like that steering wheel? I like the way I love the way it looks, but
I hate the way it feels.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so squishy, spongy? And you have these giant posts that come out. And for those who know me, know I like a pretty thin, firm wheel that's actually a little bit more upright than this. You can see this is coming up towards my face, a little van style. And I really like a wheel that's pretty much up, straight up and down. Yeah, I mean, I did not like the wheel really at all for any of my stuff.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, if you're just cruising and you're using driver assistance anyway, it doesn't really matter. You just massage seat on and cruise.
I'm picky about steering wheels. I like a good steering wheel. Actually, I thought the Chevy Bolt EV had a kind of a narrow. I bet you like that one.
So I liked the EUV with Super Cruise because it actually had this little Super Cruise camera, which was actually really nice as you brush past it when you go hand over hand.
Okay, I have to say I really like the Tesla Model 3 performance steering wheel that I tried on in South Carolina with the Brembo program. That to me, it just felt so great. It was like the right size and thickness, and it was round. I decided that. I'm really not a big fan of the flat bottom.
No, me either. It's better for ingress and egress to have a flat bottom.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, the Model 3 wheel's pretty good. Porsche just wins the steering wheel game, hands down.
It's been a while. I forget the Taycan steering wheel. I'll have to get back into the one. Okay, so Tom, so we've been hearing a whole bunch of grind. First of all, maybe you should give us a 150 ownership update, but you've got like construction going on in behind you. So maybe you can tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah. I actually have to go in about 10 minutes. So,
okay. So
let's push things along. I'll tell you exactly what's going on here. So I have a video coming out tomorrow, my top 10 likes and dislikes on the F-150 Lightning so far. I think that's going to probably explain a little bit about what you're asking me now, what I like, what I don't like. I just took it on an 1,100 mile round trip from New Jersey out to Connecticut, then up to upstate New York, into Canada, and then back home. You know, the short version of that was everything went fantastically. Charging was a breeze. I used mostly Electrify America, not completely. Plug-in charge worked every time. I just plugged it in, walked away. The highway range was pretty much what I was experienced on my 70 mile an hour highway range test. I think with the extended range battery and the 20 inch wheels that the Lariat has, you can rely dependably on about 250 miles at 70, 75 miles an hour, a little bit more if you go a little bit slower. And I was pretty much pushing it. I was setting my destination to a charging station that was almost 250 miles apart, and I was rolling in at like 5 miles an hour, 5% state of charge. The vehicle's charged great. 45 minutes, I'm back up to 80%, ready to unplug. You want to unplug the Lightning at 80% because it really slows down a lot after it, like a lot of EVs do. But Ford has been particularly conservative with that. They recently pushed out a software update for the Mach-E that allows it to hold a higher charging rate from 80 to 90%. It used to fall off a cliff at 80%. And, now it does that at 90%, which is okay. I still think they could push it a little bit better. But the Lightning holds, like, I think about 50. After 80%, it drops down to like 50 or 60 kilowatt, which isn't terrible. But, you know, you're charging it up 100 kilowatt up to 80%. So, for road trips, you want to plan on 80, 85% unplugging unless you have time to kill. And a great road trip vehicle, super quiet, less driving fatigue, super smooth. I mean, you know, it's such a different vehicle than the R1T. And I think people are going to put them in the same bucket. Oh, it's an electric pickup truck, but it's such a different vehicle. It drives so differently. It feels differently. The R1T is much more sporty, much more spirited, say, driving experience. Now, the Lightning is brutally fast in a straight line, but, you know, it really floats on the corners and everything. You're not really going to be hammering this thing in the corner. But that's most people, I think, prefer that over, you know, the sporty driving experience, because they're not taking a pickup truck, you know, and pushing it at the limit on turns that often. So what a great road tripping car, such a smooth, I keep calling it car truck, such a smooth driving experience, so quiet. They did a great job with, noise, vibration, harshness. Super impressed with it. It's hard for me to imagine after I've had it now for a couple of months, but wait till I get the R1T. I know I've told everybody I'm going to make a decision, keep one of them at some point. I'm it's going to be hard for me to imagine me keeping the R1T. I'm loving this Lightning. It's a great truck. It does everything so well. I love how the front loading, the frunk has a loading height of lower than my waist. You know, the R1T, you've got to lift stuff up over to get it in there. And I use the frunk all the time now. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I have a bad back. I've had two back surgeries. I can't pick things up heavy and especially high. So just being able to get stuff up to my waist and push it in, it's such a great tool, that frunk. So check out that video. It's coming out tomorrow. I'll have it on my YouTube channel. I'll also embed it in a post on Inside EVs. And now I'm totally remaking the garage. I've mentioned this before, doing a lot of work at the house here. As I think most people know, I do charging station reviews in my garage. I've had a whole bunch of charging stations in my garage for years now, for 10, 13 years. So I ripped everything out. For the first time, I can't charge level 2 at home. For the first time in 13 years. Although I did charge my Tesla on level 2 with the F-150 Lightnings Pro Power on board, because I went and totally charged it up at an Electrify America charging station, and then came home, and the Tesla was low, so I plugged it in and let it charge for like 5 or 6 hours. So I guess I can charge level 2 at home. But anyway, gutted the garage. And first things first, I partnered with this company called Garage Living. As you can see that picture there, it's actually a partnership. I'm not paying full price for this, but I'm paying about 50%, which is still expensive because I'm totally all new walls. I grinded down the floor. I had a epoxy floor. If anyone is familiar with that, epoxy floors in the garage. The problem with the epoxy floors is they don't last forever. They chip, they bubble, they crack. And my floor, and I had a professional company come and do it. That's my epoxy floor. You see the Garage Living grinding it up. It was, you see on the one side on the right, they're just peeling it off with like a scraper. That shouldn't happen. It should be bonded to the floor. So we grinded that down. Now we're putting in, it's called the polyaspartic floor system, which looks like epoxy, but it's not. This is like what the Navy uses for their garages and everything. It's permanent. It's not supposed to ever chip or crack or bubble or peel. I know it looks kind of the same as it did before, but trust me, it's a much better system. So that's step one. And now we're putting up all slot walls on the wall, custom cabinets. And then next week I have the electrical contractor, Qmera, is coming out, and we're going to start the installation process for the Ford Pro charging station, the 100 amp with the bi-directional feed. I bought the Ford Intelligent Backup Power System for my house. I'm going to be installing that. I'm doing a service upgrade on my house. I'm having difficulty because I was putting in a 400 amp service. That's what I applied for. And the utility is giving me a hard time upgrading to a 400 amp service because of our local electric, and also from where we wanted to locate the disconnects on the outside of the house. They're saying there's not enough clearance. So I may have to drop it down to a 200 amp service and then install a load shedding, a whole load shedding home service panel. So it'll kind of intelligently balance the power. But we're going to get into all that. I'm going to make videos on all of that, on upgrading your service, on Ford's Intelligent Backup Power, on Ford Charge Station Pro. Lots of content coming in the future, in addition to a video on the garage remake, on showing everything we did with the floor, with the walls, and why somebody might want to consider doing that. So I'm psyched. We're going to have a whole new studio. And in September, I'm going to start doing a lot more charging station and charging equipment reviews, like adapters, cables, extension cables, all that stuff is what I'm really going to start focusing more on. I have about a dozen charging stations in boxes that companies have sent me in the last couple of months that I haven't done because I was starting to do this, that I need to get caught up on. So big things coming with State of Charge Garage.
Kushal asks if you have solar. I believe you do, Tom. You have solar.
I do. And I have a 9 kW system. So and I also have a full home natural gas backup generator, a 16 kilowatt. So this installation that I'm doing is incredibly complex because I have the a natural gas generator with its own sub panel. I have a solar system, and it's an older system because I put it on 13 years ago. It has two different inverters. It has six different strings of solar panels. And now I'm going to be introducing the Ford Intelligent Backup Power System. And I'm also going to be doing a battery backup system for the house. So the engineers came out and they're looking at this. They're like, okay, so we need to integrate a natural gas generator, Ford Intelligent Backup Power, older inverters on six different strings of solar. They're just like, okay, we need to put this on paper and figure out how to do this. It's going to be like the only system in the world that has all these things combined at once. So Qmerit took it as a challenge, and we're going to have some fun videos coming, as well as a service upgrade with possibly a load shedding service panel. So all cool stuff.
If you're watching us on YouTube, if you're not watching us on YouTube right now, Martin has pulled up a picture of Tom's house with its solar array on the front and an electric BMW from back in the day. What year is it? What BMW was that, Tom?
Yeah, that was 2012 with that picture. That was my second electric vehicle. It's called the BMW Active E. For those that don't remember that, it was a one series that BMW converted to full electric. Really cool electric vehicle. Loved it. And that was about 2 years after I got the solar array. And I see Mark Richard asked, Tom, can you get rid of the generator with the lightning? I possibly could. We get a lot of power outages here. I live in a really rural part of northern New Jersey. Lots of trees, power lines get taken down all the time. So with the lightning, it has to be home and it has to be charged. So it might not work for me if I'm out and the power's out in the house. What will work for me is on-site battery storage, which I don't have yet. So we're going to make this system so that I can add that in the next step. Once I do that, I can disconnect the natural gas generator and get rid of it. But for now, I'm going to leave it there. We're going to incorporate it in. And then at some point in the future, when I decide which stationary battery system that I'm going to go with, because I haven't decided which one and how big of a battery I need, then we're going to do another series of videos installing that and taking the natural gas generator out. Adriana asked, has Ford fixed the high amp home charger issue? No, they haven't yet. Their solution is an over-the-air update to increase the operating temperature of Ford Charge Station Pro. What she's talking about is early owners that installed Ford Charge Station Pro are finding that the after charging for even 15 minutes, the charger derates its power way down from 80 amps to sometimes down to only 20 amps. And that was because the temperature settings that they had, that the station was set for, the operating, say, window was being exceeded really quickly, particularly in hot weather areas, as you'd expect in southern United States. So Ford's immediate answer to that is they're sending an over-the-air update, because the stations are capable of over-the-air updates. That's going to increase that operating window. Now, that's not a great solution. That's like, okay, we'll let it run hotter. I guess it'll work for now, but I'm disappointed that this thing actually hit the market and immediately started having problems. That's not cool. This needs to be fixed. And I don't know if just expanding that operating window should be the permanent solution. I don't know if it is. I talked to Darren Palmer about this a little bit in my interview with him about 3 or 4 weeks ago. That was right when it was first starting to happen. So, Darren said, we've seen these things. And the cool thing about it was he said, we saw about it immediately on social media. That's how Ford learned that there were problems that owners were experiencing.
Right.
They're working on it. Yeah.
Yeah. That is not ideal, but
no. Well, I'll have mine installed in a couple of weeks. We'll see if we have problems here with it now with this new software update. And I'll certainly be reporting on that.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's all they need. I mean, I imagine if they think there's it needs to be physically re-engineered, they would, ask their supplier to do that for them. I imagine they have a supplier supplying them these units. Ford is not in the business of making chargers, right?
Right. Yeah. No, they're not the ones actually making. I forget who it was. Was it Delta or Bosch? I forget who's making the Charge Station Pro. I should know. I wrote an article on it in Inside EVs last year on who their supplier was, but I can't remember. I definitely wrote an article just on that, on who their supplier was for that. So yeah, that's got to get upgraded. This is a band-aid approach, as I think somebody wrote in the comments, and you know, that's not the right way to go about it, but at least they're putting something out. Now, quite honestly, for me, I don't care if it delivers 80 amps. It should, if that's what it's rated at and that's what Ford is selling us at. I don't need 80 amp home charging. I really don't. You know, for me, 48 amps, even with a huge battery like the Lightning, is all I'm ever going to need. But I'm going to install it and I'm going to test it out and use it. I think a lot of people new to EVs are much more sensitive with having the fastest home charging that they could possibly have. Like when Tesla first came out with the Model S, they had the dual onboard chargers, which was able to deliver 80 amps, and everybody ordered it with the car. And then they started realizing they were having problems with their service. They had to upgrade their service and it wasn't worth the expense. And then Tesla kind of settled into saying, you know what, 48 amps is pretty good. Now with the Cybertruck, that might change, but for now, you know, even the largest battery Tesla charges at home nicely at 48 amps.
We dial back our home charger, to be honest with you, during the day. On a day like today, when I'm working from home and on the show and stuff, then the car is sat behind me charging. And so I dial that down because the MG can't do it from within the car. I mean, it can barely do some basic things, but I do it on the charger. So I just dial that down from 32 amp to 13. I think I do it to 13.2 amp. Although we're at 240 volt. So in terms of the power going in, that's, you know, maybe 1.6 kilowatts going in. And that does me absolutely fine, because that is it's a sunny day today. And it's a really nice, bright, sunny day today in sort of just towards the end of our summer. So loads of irradiance and the solar panels are generating a ton. The batteries, the garage battery is full. But I don't need to be just rinsing every bit into the car. So I knock the car charger back and leave it on all day. And it's been on since this morning. Since sunrise, I kind of forgotten about it. It's probably put 10 or 12 kilowatts in, and that's fine just to drip feed it on a day like today. That's 45, 50 miles added. And, you know, you don't need to obsess over super fast charging unless you've got two cars in the household, unless you're both doing long commutes and you want to get up the next morning and have both cars full. But very few families are like that. So you look at everyone's situation is different. Look at what you need to do with your car. You'll be surprised how little you drive it sometimes.
Oh, I mean, I just realized we didn't talk. We're out of time. I got to get going, but we didn't talk about your charging issues video, Kyle. Kyle did a video this week talking about, you know, issues with the whole DC charging infrastructure ecosystem right now, and issues, a lot of problems with chargers not being, you know, working and backups and everything. We don't have time to get super into it this week, but if you do have an opportunity, we should talk about this soon, if not next week. But check out Kyle's video on that in the meantime. But I think we should probably leave it at that. And
are you gonna make a crashed Tesla update, please?
Yeah, I just don't have an update, so the insurance adjuster went to go look at it, but I will keep everyone literally every step of the way, probably on my channel, the Kyle Connor YouTube channel. Everything's broken, as you know, Martin, so I'm gonna do all the updates on everything, basically.
Yeah,
everything's broken. Mark commented on my coffee cup, so I had to get
the coffee cup. Yeah. Okay, so that'll be on your check, because we want to know, like, I mean, I know, you know, bad news sells, but we do want to know what's happening with the Plaid, and how fixing it is coming along, and how bad Jordan continues to feel. Please, if you can update us.
Well, I'm not sure Jordan really feels bad.
What? He crashed a $150,000 car.
Yeah, but think of the views he's getting, though, Martin. This is the best thing for Kyle.
No, it's not. The video tanked.
Oh, what?
No, it had, really? It had like 60,000 views, didn't it?
Did it really tank?
It really didn't do well. So, but that's okay. Like, I'm not trying to get views out of him crashing my car. Right. I won't crash my
Lightning now for views.
Right. No, don't do that. But yeah, well, I'll let everyone know what happens. That's why we have insurance. Accidents happen, and you know, I didn't make it a big deal, so I don't think he made it a big deal. That's totally fine.
Cool.
All right. So I think that brings us to the end of our show for today, but man, we have so much more to talk about. So I guess we'll have to come back again next week. I don't know.
Dom, let me cut in for a sec.
Sure.
Do we have anything going on next week out of the usual, or is that still?
We may have a special guest. So I think, Martin, you're not with us next week?
Monday. Monday? Are you talking Monday or Friday?
I was talking Monday.
Monday. Oh, I won't be here Monday because it's a bank holiday, because it's, of course, we're in Europe. So, you know, it's always a bank holiday on a Monday. So I won't be working. But you guys might. We'll update the viewers on that if we get feedback today. And then Friday. No, I'm at a cabin next week in a forest with bad Wi-Fi. So there will be a stand-in presenter far, far superior.
There's
the
no far, far superior. You are the far superior. You'll the superiorist.
Dom, you'll be pressing the buttons next week. So I won't be here to press the buttons.
All right. So we're trying to get another infrastructure show in as well. But I don't think that guest is, if that's what you're talking about, Tom, I don't think
that's what I was talking about.
Yeah. We haven't solidified that yet, but hopefully soon. I haven't heard back from them yet. So I have a special guest in Martin's chair next week. And yeah, so that's it, I guess. Anything else? Kyle's ready to hit the streets of shit.
I got a Taycan Turbo sitting in the garage. I'm ready to go.
You get the Sport Turismo, or?
It's the same one I had last week.
Sport Turismo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but it's got all the new software on it now. So I'm going to go play around with all the new stuff. Tom's already made some videos with it, but I haven't experienced it yet.
All right. Well, we'll hear about that next week then. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And then we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.